Today's broadcast was originally recorded on January 5th, 2026.
Clearly, this is wildly illegal, dragging America into a war overseas. The president cannot run a military operation of this size, cannot invade a foreign country without coming to Congress first, without allowing the American public to weigh in. America doesn't want this war. Nobody asked for this because it has nothing to do with American national security. Once again, you're seeing that this president's foreign policy, the invasion of Venezuela, the ouster of Maduro, is about making his crowd filthy rich. It has nothing to do with American national security.
Correct. You are correct, Senator. Thank you for speaking up. That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm too scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950. KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, including here in 2026. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. Yes, we are back live after a much-needed two-week break from the Bradcast. However, it appears Desi Doyen has brought her her holiday gift back for me from Texas yet again this year.
Yeah, sorry.
Another illness. Thanks, Des. Though this time it's just a simple cold, as opposed to COVID, which you were kind enough to bring me in years past, as I recall.
The gift that keeps on giving. Correct. Going to Texas.
Thank you very much. Texas and Desi Doyen. We will. She seems to be getting over her cold, by the way. Am I right about that, Desiree?
Yes, much better now.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, I seem to be just starting mine. So we are back this week, as long as I can be back. We will see how the week goes. Illnesses aside, I had been planning to cover a whole bunch of stuff today, as we are now officially in a new major election year with November 3rd. Mark it down, November 3rd. It is now the day that I will be thinking about, talking about damn near every day throughout 2026, as the day when America officially, hopefully, begins to reclaim its sovereignty from our current corrupt leader. Now, I had been hoping to cover a number of election-related stories and some other stuff that the Trump administration had hoped to bury over the holidays, including their unlawful failure to release the full Epstein files. And as this week is the fifth anniversary of Donald Trump's January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol in his failed hopes of stealing the 2020 election, I wanted to cover some of the recent U.S. House testimony by special counsel Jack Smith, who indicted Donald Trump both for both his attempt to steal the 2020 election and his theft of thousands of pages of national security documents upon leaving office the first time. What will he do this time when he leaves office? Well, that remains to be seen. But both of those indictments have now been withdrawn because Trump's successful second election in 2024, I guess when Democrats decided they didn't want to steal the election, that must be it. But Trump and House Republicans on the Oversight Committee, they attempted to bury the Jack Smith's recent damning testimony about those indictments by refusing, I believe it's for the first time, to allow the special counsel to testify in public. And it was only after pressure that the Republicans agreed to release both the video and the transcript of that 8 hours of testimony. They released it on New Year's Eve. So if you didn't see it, don't feel bad about it. If you didn't see it, didn't read it, didn't even hear about it, that would be why. They had hoped to bury it. We had hoped to counter that on today's show, along with a number of other things, such as the Supreme Court's ruling just before Christmas, blocking Donald Trump from deploying federalized National Guard against American citizens in American cities, and Trump's very quiet New Year's Eve capitulation, finally withdrawing those troops from here in Los Angeles, finally giving up the ghost on that, at least for now, as well as in Chicago and Portland, where they were never actually deployed, thanks to both protests and court rulings against the Trump administration and Donald Trump's attempt to break the law. I'm still happy to take calls today, however, on any of those stories later this hour at 818-985-5735, as well as on our top story today, which, given what he did late on Friday night, well, those other stories, I'm afraid, are going to have to wait until tomorrow or the days ahead. For now, following Trump's latest abuse of power against the United States and the world, as I'm sure you've heard by now, late on Friday night and into Saturday morning over the weekend, after months of threats by the U.S. and murderous missile attacks that have killed well over 100 people now in small boats said to be trafficking drugs, Donald Trump gave the final order for the U.S. military to attack Venezuela and abduct its ruler, Nicolas Maduro, to kidnap him. A word, by the way, that Trump said he thought was appropriate to describe what he did. To kidnap Maduro and bring him to the United States, where there has been an outstanding warrant for his arrest over several years related to allegations of involvement in drug and weapons trafficking. After a round of bombs were dropped in and around Venezuela's capital city of Caracas late on Friday, both Maduro and his wife Celia Flores were apprehended, reportedly in their bedroom by U.S. special forces who entered the country via helicopters, attack helicopters in the dark of night. Though there had been no charges against Flores, the wife, previously, on Monday morning, both Maduro and his wife pleaded not guilty to charges involving drug and weapons trafficking in a federal courtroom in New York City, where Maduro declared he was still president of Venezuela. Neither notice nor legal justification for the attack and the abduction of the Venezuelan president and his wife was offered by the Trump administration to Congress, which has sole war-making authority, according to the U.S. Constitution. No notice was given to Congress prior to the attack, the act of war on a foreign sovereign nation, even if it is or was a nation headed up by a dictatorial leader who appears to have stolen his most recent election back in 2024. A visibly exhausted President Donald Trump on Saturday, who seemed to be having trouble staying awake, as his own top general offered details of the attack at the press conference, he announced repeatedly on Saturday that the U.S. would now, quote, run the nation of Venezuela and that the U.S. would take control of Venezuela's massive oil reserves.
We're going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. So we don't want to be involved with having somebody else get in, and we have the same situation that we had for the last long period of years. So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition, and it has to be judicious, because that's what we're all about. We want peace, liberty, and justice for the great people of Venezuela, and that includes many from Venezuela that are now living in the United States and want to go back to their country. It's their homeland. We can't take a chance that somebody else takes over Venezuela that doesn't have the good of the Venezuelan people in mind. We've had decades of that. So we're going to stay until such time as we're going to run it, essentially, until such time as a proper transition can take place.
Now, Venezuela does boast the largest oil reserves on the planet. It sits on a massive 300 billion barrels worth of crude, about a fifth of the world's global reserves, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. And Trump vowed repeatedly during his often rambling remarks, as you could hear there, that he planned to recruit American companies to invest billions of dollars to refurbish the country's oil industry, just as we had warned he was preparing to do or hoping to do right before taking our break for the holidays.
As everyone knows, the oil business in Venezuela has been a bust, a total bust, for a long period of time. They were pumping almost nothing by comparison to what they could have been pumping and what could have taken place. We're going to have our very large United States oil companies, the biggest anywhere in the world, go in, spend billions of dollars, fix the badly broken infrastructure, the oil infrastructure, and start making money for the country. And we are ready to stage a second and much larger attack if we need to do so. So we were prepared to do a second wave if we needed to do so. We actually assumed that a second wave would be necessary, but now it's probably not.
Start making money for which country, Mr. President? Now, by the way, even if, and Desi, I know you're working on, you've been looking into the Venezuela oil situation down there for tomorrow's Green News Report. So correct me if I'm wrong on any of this here, but even if international access to Venezuelan reserves were immediately fully restored tomorrow, even though it would take tens of billions of dollars, but if it were restored tomorrow, it could take years and incredible expense to bring that oil production fully back online, even if they started trying to do it tomorrow. None of this is going to happen overnight. It supposedly will take years at this point.
Many years before any actual oil would begin to flow, because Venezuela's entire petroleum infrastructure is quite decrepit from lack of investment, lack of repairs. And so it will take estimated, according to various industry experts, estimated, 4 to 5 years before anything is up to the ability to begin extracting. And then that is also a difficult process because it's of the kind of oil that Venezuela
has. And it would take 4 or 5 years at best if you had U.S. oil companies who are willing to now go into the country, even while the leadership of the country is, unclear. We'll get to in a minute. But you're right. They haven't updated the pipelines in about 50 years. The cost to update the infrastructure to return to peak production levels would cost, according to experts, about $60 billion.
In an unstable government and unstable operating conditions, presumably with not being able to potentially guarantee the safety of employees and workers who might be trying to do that work.
At this time, Venezuela produces about 1 million barrels of oil a day. That's about 0.8% of global crude production. So, in fact, none of this is going to have a tremendous effect on the price of oil, which is globally, set globally. But Venezuela's energy infrastructure has long been deteriorating. Its capacity to produce has greatly diminished over the years. Oil prices, again, set on the global market, have been pretty much in check over the past year because of oversupply fears. We don't necessarily need more oil. OPEC, of which Venezuela is a member, has ramped up their production, but demand has fallen as the global economy continues to struggle with inflation, with affordability after the post-pandemic price shocks. Of course, None of this, for oil or otherwise, is lawful, not under international law, not under U.S. law. It is in strict violation of the prohibition on the use of force against sovereign nations. In Article 2, Section 4 of the United Nations Charter, of which, of course, the U.S. is a signatory. Even the Trump administration, at least prior to the assault on Venezuela over the weekend, even they admitted as much. Back in early November, White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles told Vanity Fair that land strikes in Venezuela would, in fact, require the approval of Congress. She said that if Trump, quote, were to authorize some activity on land, then it's war, then we'd need Congress. That was Donald Trump's chief of staff just about 2 months ago. Days later, Trump administration officials privately told members of Congress very much the same thing, that they lacked a legal justification to support attacks against any land targets in Venezuela. And 2 months later, however, the Trump administration has done what it previously said that it could not do. It launched what Trump called a, quote, large-scale strike against Venezuela. It captured its president to face charges, launching a regime change effort, the type that Donald Trump spent years pretending to be against, without either the approval of or even notification to Congress as mandated by U.S. law. But I know a lot of folks out there who supported Donald Trump, supported him because he pretended to be against these sort of foreign incursions, these regime change efforts by the U.S. How do you feel about that now? 818-985-5735. Legally dubious strikes inside another country, even ones narrowly tailored to remove a foreign leader, are hardly unheard of course, in recent American history. But as CNN's Aaron Blake observes, even in that context, this one is remarkable because the Trump administration has taken remarkably little care to offer any sort of consistent justifications or legal frameworks for this attack. In other words, they didn't even bother trying to lie about it very well. Notifying Congress ahead of time, which they did not do, is generally the bare minimum in these circumstances. Over the weekend, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who Trump indicated would be in charge of running Venezuela for the time being, claimed that notification of Congress was not necessary because, in Rubio's words, this was merely a, quote, law enforcement function that involved, quote, a couple of hours of action. So I guess a little bit of war you don't have to notify Congress about. Quote, this was not an attack on Venezuela, he told NBC's Meet the Press when he was asked directly about what White House Chief of Staff Susie Wiles had said, her comment that land strikes would require going to Congress. He said, quote, this was a law enforcement function to capture an indicted drug trafficker. Oh, that's all it is. Just a police action. That, of course, for those of you not old enough to remember, was the same justification that was given for going to war, for example, in Korea back in 1950. Just a police action, not a war. Rubio added that the administration did not need congressional approval, quote, because this was not an invasion. This was not an extended military operation. I'm not sure that whether it's extended or not, or the length of time of that military operation actually makes a difference in whether the law requires Congress to be notified.
And also calling it a law enforcement action, how many law enforcement actions kill 80 or more people on the ground?
Yeah. Well,
in Venezuela.
And we don't even know how many were killed, by the way. And how many law enforcement actions also include kidnapping the indicted man's wife, who stood no charges whatsoever, as far as anyone knew, at least until suddenly today. But there are many people living in other countries that are currently under indictment in the U.S., and it's not the U.S. government's normal course to launch military strikes on foreign countries in order to bring those people to justice. But things change, apparently. Moreover, despite Trump's initial claims that Venezuela was trafficking fentanyl to the U.S., in fact, most fentanyl travels here by land via Mexico, Venezuela is better known for its cocaine trade, though it is apparently a small player in that industry, and the administration had not previously indicated that military force could be used for this reason, to go after drug traffickers. Furthermore, just weeks ago, on December 1, Donald Trump issued a full pardon to a man named Juan Orlando Hernandez, the former president of Honduras. He had been indicted, convicted, and sentenced to more than 45 years in prison here in the U.S. for his part in helping to traffic more than 400 tons of cocaine into the U.S. between 2004 and 2022. He was arrested, tried, and convicted, was set to serve 45 years for drug trafficking to the U.S., 400 tons of cocaine, and Donald Trump pardoned him just weeks ago before the man, I believe, even ever began serving his sentence. After targeting alleged drug boats running off the coast of Venezuela, Trump later suggested that strikes might be needed in Venezuela because Venezuela sent bad people into the United States. So it's not fentanyl, it's not cocaine, it's that they sent bad people to the United States. Okay, stick a pin in that one for a moment. I'll be getting back to that one. And then, after he initially downplayed the role of oil in the U.S. pressure campaign against Venezuela and Maduro, Trump said that he aimed to reclaim, quote, the oil, the land, and the other assets that they previously stole from us. They stole our land, our oil and our land, apparently, even though it was oil and land in Venezuela. So it wasn't the fentanyl, it wasn't the cocaine. It wasn't the bad people. It was actually the fact that they stole our oil and our land in their own country. Take your pick. The signals were confusing enough that even the hawkish Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina back in mid-December, he said that whatever the administration was doing, it lacked, quote, clarity in his messaging. Oh, do you think, Lindsey? Not that any of that, of course, has prevented Graham from supporting whatever unlawful measures that this president takes at any time, in any place, anywhere. After all, Trump lets him play golf with him on his courses. So, you know. Now, the responses from congressional Democratic leaders to these war crimes, at least from Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, have to date been remarkably tepid, if you ask me. Frankly, DNC Chair Ken Martin, he offered what seemed to be one of the most full-throated responses against the administration's actions over the weekend. He wrote in a statement, quote, Trump promised peace but has delivered war. For months, the Trump administration has escalated conflict in Venezuela with unconstitutional and illegal strikes and lied to the American people. Now, Trump has committed the United States to running another country for the foreseeable future while Americans foot the bill for regime change. Trump finally said the quiet part out loud, wrote Martin. The justification for this war isn't about stemming the flow of drugs. This is about regime change. It's about enriching oil corporations and billionaires. Congress must immediately assert its constitutional authority over American military action, the same authority that Trump's own chief of staff said he needs. This, writes Ken Martin, is the worst kind of betrayal from Donald Trump. He committed the U.S. to an uncertain role in South America with an indeterminate timeline. As Trump's influence over the country and the world wanes, he is ready and willing to endanger Americans and abandon the Constitution as a last-ditch effort to hold on to power and relevancy. The former vice president of the United States and 2024's Democratic presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, she was also more direct than many of the congressional Democrats that I heard in her response over the weekend. She wrote, quote, Donald Trump's actions in Venezuela do not make America safer, stronger, or more affordable. That Maduro is a brutal, illegitimate dictator does not change the fact that this action was both unlawful and unwise. We've seen this movie before, she said. Wars for regime change or oil that are sold as strength but turn into chaos and American families pay the price. The American people do not want this, and they are tired of being lied to. So now what? Well, even the Trump administration doesn't seem to have a clue. They seem to be making it up as they go along. As NPR reported on Sunday, there was global uncertainty about who was in charge of Venezuela over the weekend after the U.S. military dramatically attacked Caracas and captured its president. In a press conference on Saturday, they note Trump claimed that the U.S. was going to, quote, run Venezuela, but Trump indicated that Delcy Rodriguez, Maduro's deputy as both vice president and oil minister, had been sworn in as Venezuela's interim president, would act as a partner in letting the United States run the country. Quote, she's essentially willing to do what we think is necessary to make Venezuela great again, said Trump. But Rodriguez delivered her own address on state television in which she undermined that claim, announcing, quote, there is only one president in this country and his name is Nicolas Maduro. We are determined to be free, Rodriguez added in her remarks while accompanied by Venezuela's military leaders, noting, quote, what is being done to Venezuela is barbaric, she said. In his press conference, Trump said that Rodriguez had a conversation with Secretary of State and National Security Advisor Marco Rubio and said, according to Trump, quote, we'll do whatever you need. Apparently, that's not the case. Her response seemed to undermine that claim as she demanded the immediate release of Maduro and his wife, against whom there had been no previous charges by the U.S., as noted. And she denounced the U.S. operation as a violation of the United Nations Charter, which, of course, it clearly is. Who can do anything about it is another question. In 2024, opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez, in a story that we covered in detail for some weeks, Gonzalez was widely believed to have won a contentious election in Venezuela against the incumbent Maduro by a landslide. Exit polling showed Gonzalez leading Maduro 65-31%. However, Maduro claimed victory. He refused to have government officials release polling place results, and he stayed in power. And Gonzalez was forced to seek exile in Spain. He ran in the 2024 election, Gonzalez did, because Maria Corina Machado, the Venezuelan opposition leader, had been banned from being the candidate that year. She garnered international acclaim last year when she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, the one that Donald Trump believes should have been rewarded to him. In case you're wondering why the woman who won the Peace Prize for being the opposition in Venezuela was not cited by Donald Trump as the one that he wanted to take over the country, well, look at that Peace Prize. Even though she'd be the natural leader for the U.S. to install in their coup, Trump claimed over the weekend, quote, I think it would be very tough for her, for Machado, to be the leader. She doesn't have the support within or the respect within the country, said Trump. In fact, administration officials have since conceded, even though Machado dedicated her Nobel Prize to Donald Trump, which he thought he should have won, well, she didn't refuse to accept that prize. Had she done so, one White House official told media outlets, she would be the president of Venezuela today.
So if she had refused the Nobel Prize that she was granted and given it to Trump, perhaps, instead.
Yeah, it wasn't enough to dedicate it to him to even tell him that she believes he deserves it. Because she accepted it, she is being punished. Even though she would be the natural leader at this point for the country, she's being punished. And the woman who won the stolen election along with Maduro is now being cited by Trump as the new president of the country. And that woman says, nope, I'm not the new president. Maduro is still the president.
Insanity.
So, yes, much of this has little, you know, more than being about Trump's personal ego, period. Something to keep in mind when pondering, as the world continues to do today, why any of this is even happening. I'll share my own thoughts on that, why I think it's happening shortly. But if you'd like to ring in on that question, why Trump actually attacked Venezuela. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. 818-985-5735. Again, always happy to hear from supporters of Trump as well on these matters. I know a lot of you are cowardly enough to write to me on Twitter, but not to actually call in with a thought. Maybe that's a New Year's resolution for you. Don't be afraid. I won't bite. 818-985-KPFK. Soon after the U.S. operation on Saturday, Machado, the Peace Prize winner, called for the exiled Gonzalez, who arguably actually won the presidential race in 2024 in Venezuela, to, quote, immediately assume his constitutional mandate and be recognized as commander-in-chief. In her statement, Machado, whose whereabouts are currently unknown, said that her popular movement in Venezuela would, quote, restore order, free political prisoners, build an exceptional country, and bring our children back home, unquote, referring to the unprecedented exodus of Venezuelans amidst the authoritarian reigns of first the late Hugo Chavez and then his own deputy Maduro following Chavez's death back in 2013. Trump's declaration that Delcy Rodriguez, Maduro's deputy, would become president would seem to counter what Machado was saying. But, you know, that'll teach her for accepting the Nobel Prize and dedicating it to Donald Trump. It may not go well for Rodriguez either, however. In a telephone interview with The Atlantic over the weekend, Trump issued yet another threat, a threat this time against Rodriguez, saying that, quote, if she doesn't do what's right, she is going to pay a very big price, probably bigger than Maduro, adding that he would not stand for Rodriguez's defiant rejection of military intervention by the United States. Additionally, during that same interview, Trump reaffirmed that Venezuela may not be the last country subject to unlawful American intervention, or even that it would remain isolated to Latin America. He stated, quote, we do need Greenland. Absolutely. Describing the island, which is a part of Denmark, a close U.S. ally and a member of NATO. In a subsequent gaggle on board Air Force One on Sunday, Trump returned from holiday at Mar-a-Lago. He threatened a second strike against Venezuela, as well as against Cuba and Mexico and Colombia and Iran and, yes, of course, Greenland. That's a lot of wars for a president who spent years lying to his supporters that he was a peace president who opposes foreign wars and nation building. Perhaps he's changed his mind about that, even though in truth, he was never a peace president for those who were paying actual attention. Never. No matter how much he claimed otherwise, no matter how much his suckered supporters repeated that claim. Got thoughts on that? 818-985-5735. So what is all of this actually about? Is it drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, distractions from the Epstein files, special counsel Jack Smith's recent testimony in the U.S. House? Is it about, oil? I don't know. Give us a call. 818-985-KPFK. In fact, I think it's somewhat about all of those things, but also about something else entirely, mostly about something else that I'll talk about after a break, along with your calls. Two things I think it's about, in fact. We'll talk about that after a quick break, discuss that along with your calls and along with all of the above or anything else you want to talk about to ring in on as we begin the new year with a bang, the new midterm election year, I must note. All of that straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the broadcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the broadcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Bradcast.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. An ailing Brad Friedman with a cold. Please pardon me. 818-985-5735 is our number. 818-985-KPFK. Would love to hear from you on any or all of the above. In fact, I'd hope to talk to you all about your hopes and expectations for 2026, the election year. We will get to that in the days ahead. But of course, as usual, Donald Trump would have none of that and is taking over the spotlight as usual. This time with a brutal, violent attack on a sovereign nation. Good luck telling Russia they're not allowed to do that. Good luck telling China they're not allowed to do that in Taiwan. But since Trump's act of war against Venezuela on Friday night and Saturday morning and his kidnapping of the president there, there has been much confusion and speculation about why he did any of this. There seems to be confusion and speculation among the Trump administration itself. So I would love to know what your thoughts are on that, why he did this, and any idea which country is next. So far, since his attack on Venezuela, he and other administration officials have threatened Mexico, Cuba, Colombia, Iran, Greenland, with similar actions. Will he do it? Should those nations now be concerned, do you think? 818-985-5735, if you'd like to ring in on that. Let me take a few callers before I get to why I think he has done all of this. Al in Huntington Beach. Hey, Al, welcome to the broadcast. Happy New Year, sir.
Hello.
You're on.
Yes. Hey, I think the main reason that he did this,
yeah,
is for one is the he's hid the Epstein files,
mm-hmm. Distraction,
and also distraction, and yeah, also the economy,
yeah,
and also
the economy. How does it help the economy? Oh, distracting from the problem economy.
Distracting
gotcha.
From the economy.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And because there's so many layoffs, we're going into a major recession, man.
Yeah.
And but the main thing is he wants to keep the from devaluing the dollar, because China and Russia gave Venezuela billions of dollars to renew their oil industry, mm-hmm. and they were going to trade in the oil in their own currencies. So the dollar would have been devalued. Mm. And so we're like $38 trillion in debt, and our bonds would have been worthless.
Mm. All right. That's, I guess, as good a guess as any. Thanks, Al. I appreciate the thoughts. And again, Happy New Year to you. Let me go to Alyssa in Southgate. Am I right about that, Alyssa?
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you for giving us a call. Happy New Year. What's on your mind, Alyssa?
Oh, to you as well. You know, I just wanted your feedback on this also, but I know that there's not just one reason for this. There's always many reasons for the way poli-sci works.
Mm-hmm.
But I just see that it's clear that, for example, Israel is asserting itself as the superpower of West Asia and Africa, and it very much wants to exercise that power, whether militarily, economically, and what have you. In that case, the United States, because of whatever, you know, complications that would be with energy from that sector of the world, they want to, on steroids, assert itself throughout North and South America, and including the Arctic of Greenland. And I think there was a deal where Putin gets to keep Ukraine and maybe take back some of Eastern Europe, because he didn't really say a lot about this. And I heard something somewhere that there was conversations about Putin kind of pulling back from Venezuela and Trump going very easy on him in regards to Ukraine. And we've seen that.
Yeah.
And
where Putin reportedly said, "You take take Venezuela, give me Ukraine," essentially.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And also, I just think that the results for the peoples of the world, whether they're the peoples of the Middle East and Africa, whether they're people right here in the United States and Latin America, or the people in Eastern Europe. I think Western Europe is just kind of going to kind of just stay isolated by itself, basically. But I just think all of this is going to result for a lot less civil liberties and free speech. We saw the Palestinian activist students arrested. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of also coming from Israel, this stuff that they put on people's phone that surveys people.
Yeah.
So these are dark times. They're dark times.
They are dark times indeed. And there is, I mean, Trump seems to be, he calls it the Donroe Doctrine, echoing the Monroe Doctrine, basically saying the U.S. should have control of the Americas, everything from, you know, the Arctic into North America, all the way down to the tip of South America, that somehow the U.S. is in control of that. Whether he has that that much of an understanding of world politics remains to be seen. I know that others in his administration certainly do. Whether Donald Trump understands any of this remains to be seen. Alyssa, I appreciate your thought. Your guess is as good as anybody. Yeah, go ahead, quickly.
One more thing really quick. I really felt the need to protest in some way, but I'm busy working and I didn't know where any were. I knocked on the door at my local recruiter's office and I told them, shame on you for conscripting our young people for these illegal wars from the pedophile in chief who's all over the Epstein files. And now he's a thief as well. So I just told him, shame on you. I had to do something. I had to say something. So everyone, please speak up.
Thank you, Alyssa. I really appreciate you calling in. I appreciate your speaking up. 818-985-5735. So, you know, yeah, the administration has made all of these various claims at many times. And we'll get back to some of these calls in a second. But I just want to share, you know, quickly my thought. You know, this notion that it was that this attack on Venezuela on Maduro was due to narco-terrorism regarding fentanyl and then cocaine, that he's bad for Venezuela overall, that he stole somehow U.S. property and oil that happened to be in Venezuela. Venezuela is too friendly with Cuba or Iran or China, which buys about 75% of their oil now. Many, of course, have correctly argued that all of this is meant as a distraction from the damning release or the unlawful lack thereof of the Epstein files, in hopes of burying the recent testimony by Special Counsel Jack Smith on his indictment against Trump, which we hope to unbury soon. His indictment against Trump for Trump's efforts to steal the 2020 election. All of those things, I believe, are true in various ways for various members of this administration who all sort of seem to have their own reason for wanting to attack Venezuela, or at least for, you know, explaining why they did. For Donald Trump, however, in addition to distraction from his political woes, his numbers are at pretty much all-time lows, his approval numbers, and a new poll out today shows only a third of the U.S. actually approves of this attack on Venezuela. You know, as a distraction to his woes, getting access for his friends to the in the oil industry, to the world's largest known oil reserves, I think it's about all of those things, but it is also about something else, two things. One, it's about his desperate need to display his own personal power. Just a display of power by showing that he controls everything, including the largest, most lethal military on Earth, and that he gets to use it for whatever reason he goddamn wants to. And arguably, this whole thing is little more than that. He did it because he could do it, because he could show how strong he is, because this weak man could show how powerful he is by exercising the largest military on Earth, and he wanted to show that. Just as he could, you know, just as easily tear down the East Wing of the White House if he wanted to. I think that's one part of it. I think the other part is also because he never forgets anything. Especially something that he has lost, because he lost a battle, for example, against offshore wind turbines that were visible from one of his golf courses in Scotland. Well, because of that, because he's mad about that, we've all got to go without renewable energy now in support of his ridiculous claim that wind turbines kill too many birds or cause cancer or drives whales crazy or whatever nonsense he has come up with. Because of that, because of you know, something that he lost some years ago, he never lets it go. In that same way, one of Trump's very first efforts after becoming president again in early 2025, one of his very first efforts at mass deportation in his second term was when he unlawfully shipped hundreds of Venezuelan migrants here in the U.S. out to a gulag in El Salvador, claiming the right to do so under the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. It was one of his major actions as president, one of his first major actions as president in his second term. It was roundly blocked by the federal courts, who found that foreign nationals may only be detained and deported under the act if we were at war, essentially, with the nation in question. And ever since then, since he couldn't use the Alien Enemies Act to deport Venezuelans, he has been trying to bait the nation, to bait Venezuela into an actual war so that he could then apply the Alien Enemies Act, as he always felt he should be able to do in the first place, whether we were at war with them or not, as the law requires. I've been warning for a long time now that, in truth, he was likely baiting Venezuela for exactly that reason, so he could make his unlawful use of the Alien Enemies Act somehow legal. And on Sunday night, Donald Trump himself appeared to claim as much, according to Reuters, who reported that he told reporters on Air Force One on Sunday night, quote, "What really played into the decision to capture Maduro is the fact that he sent millions of people into our country from prisons and from mental institutions, drug dealers, every drug addict in his country was sent into our country." Now, that's not what happened at all, of course, but that's what Trump has been claiming falsely on the campaign trail. That's what was the justification he used for trying to deport hundreds of Venezuelans under the Alien Enemies Act, that they were attacking our country, that it was an invasion by Maduro, which is not true. But he tried to do that. He was blocked by the courts from doing so. Even the Supreme Court blocked him from doing so. And he never forgets. And now he's trying to make Venezuela into an actual enemy that has declared war on the U.S. so he can then use the AEA of 1798 to deport tens of thousands of Venezuelans at once. He must get his way. And that's what I believe all of this is mostly about. You may see it differently. If so, call me, 818-985-5735. Let me go to Kyle in Hollywood. Hey, Kyle, welcome to the broadcast. Happy New Year, sir.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay. Got a cold, but I'm surviving. What's up, brother?
Well, I agree with the reason you just said, but I also think this is all about three letters, O-I-L.
Yeah.
This is the Iraq War all over again. With Iraq Veterans Against the War, it was all about the oil then and resources. I think it's all about the oil now. You know, it's these pretexts. You know, he calls it narco terrorism. What terrorism? Where's the terrorists? Where's the terrorism?
And since when do we deploy the U.S. military to go after drug runners? Basically,
yeah, he's putting our troops in harm's way, yeah, just like he did with us back then. He's for a pack of lies and profiteering.
Yeah.
Profiteer. And people look at, and he said he's going to do this with other countries now, on top of everything else, and the sex trafficking, all these other crimes, that people need to call their reps. We can sit here and diagnose all day long. We need to call our reps and demand impeachment now.
And by the way, Kyle,
our democracy won't survive.
And by the way, Kyle, if they did vote to impeach, and they somehow, you remember, Republicans control currently both chambers of Congress. But if they were able to impeach, you realize he would not be removed from power almost certainly by the Republican U.S. Senate, where some two-thirds of the a supermajority is essentially needed to remove a president from power. But you feel that they should impeach him anyway, despite that?
Absolutely. And to anyone that thinks that, I mean, here's my answer to that. We put, and he got 140 votes last week when Representative Green introduced articles of impeachment. Mm-hmm. It wasn't reported in the mainstream. And 47 voted president. So there's a lot of momentum building very fast for this. Okay. But even if we don't have votes, because all the Republicans, even if all the Republicans stonewall now, we have to tell them, any of you who don't vote for impeachment now in the face of this out of control rogue dictator who's trying to turn our democracy into an aggressive dictatorship, will have to answer for that next year in the midterms, why you supported a rogue dictator abusing our military, why you supported a sex trafficker, or who's supporting a sex trafficker, and who's trying to do away with our Constitution, all our constitutional rights, and take down our democracy.
And by the way, I believe you're absolutely correct, Kyle. I think it doesn't matter whether there are enough votes to remove him or not. In fact, I think it doesn't even matter if there's enough votes to impeach him or not in the House. You have to do it. You have to show what you're willing to do so that, yes, you can, and you hit the nail on the head, Kyle, you can then hold those people accountable, those congressmen and women. Hold them accountable for their vote. If they're willing to vote against them, vote against that, vote against the rule of law, vote against the Constitution, then make it clear that we, the American people, are going to vote against them in November. And I think that's
absolutely
a great way to.
And even. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And even before the elections, when Trump sees the momentum building as quickly as it is, last time, you know, we got 140 votes for impeachment last week. It was almost double last time around. He starts looking at that. He's getting nervous, and rightfully so. It should be, you know, and that weakens him. That makes him less likely to, you know, to try to get away with the things that at least the things he was already trying to get away with. And it also sends a message to the Supreme Court, I think, and the other Republicans in Congress that the tables are turning. The momentum is turning. That's why you see the rest starting to jump ship now. The Supreme Court backed off on the deployments to U.S. cities. Now so did Trump. Yeah. And you just have to build the momentum and express our outrage and tell them this isn't acceptable.
Thanks, Kyle. I really do appreciate that call. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Rob in Apple Valley. Hey, Rob, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Yep.
Hey, happy New Year to you, Brad.
And
I hope
to you.
Everything's well with you.
Thank you,
good,
sir.
Good. Yeah. I thought of another country. Oh, yeah, wait, real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Donald Trump is a peace president, right? He's a piece of fill in the
blank.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I see what you're doing there, Rob.
But real quick though.
Yeah.
As far as the next country, he's going to invade for oil. You know, if that's the case, it's going to be Texas.
There you go. Well, yeah, it is that, like a whole separate country, a whole nother country, right? There we go. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. While I was on hold, I also thought too, like on the outskirts of Edmonton, you know, in Alberta, there's all the tar sands up there too. So, you know, Canada or Alberta could be on their list too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, he's threatened to make them the 51st state, whether they like it or not. And if you got oil under your ground right now, there is good, and you're in our hemisphere, there is good reason to worry, I would say. Thanks for the call, Rob. Happy New Year to
you're
you,
welcome.
My friend. Appreciate it.
I would also mention that Greenland has lots of rare earth minerals and other elements and resources that Trump has coveted quite a bit.
And by the way, keep in mind, if or when he attacks Greenland, he is attacking Denmark, which is a member of NATO, which has the requirement of coming to the aid of any NATO country that is attacked by another country, even, I guess, if that country happens to be the United States.
Well, sure. That's what the contract says, the treaty says.
It's all going well. All right, let me quickly get in. Do I have time for one or two more? Yeah, let me get to John in Laguna Hills. Hey, John, welcome to the broadcast. Happy New Year, sir. Oh, John. Hey, John.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can, but I'm going to need you to be quick. I've got just a minute or two.
Okay. First of all, I want to wish you all Happy New Year. My concern is that I'm an Iranian, and I want to make sure that Trump should do his own business. Iran's problem is with the Iranian people. He does not understand any of our culture.
Yeah, well, since when has that stopped? He doesn't understand any of our culture either, John. Since when has that stopped Donald Trump from doing anything? Sorry, I had to cut it short there because it was a little bit difficult to hear you, John. But I think what he was saying is basically now Trump is talking again about going back to Iraq and that he should stay out of their business. Let me see. Bill in Santa Monica. What are you saying there, Des? That real quick.
Oh, that Bill in Santa Monica called and said that today, everything that's going on today reminds him of Poland in 1979. I'm sorry, 1939. Yeah, that's considerably different.
Yes, it is.
1939.
I wish it was Poland in 1979. Thanks for that call, Bill. Let me see if I can quickly get our old friend Morris in for the first time in the new year. Omo in Long Beach, welcome back to the Bradcast, sir, and Happy New Year, my friend.
And Happy New Year to everyone else who's in the sound of my voice. Listen, that invasion in Venezuela was all about protecting the petrodollar, because the petrodollar is losing its kick. Saudi Arabia is violated, is not that violated, but they terminated the contract with the United States, so now oil can be sold outside of the petrodollar, so now countries don't need to hold American reserves anymore. Mm-hmm. And when we get together with BRICS, we're in trouble. And we better watch ourselves. If we're trying to take a squeeze on it, we're going to be able to manifest anything. That's the way.
Thank you, Mo. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, my friend. And he might be right. I'm dubious that, frankly, Donald Trump gives a damn about the oil. I think it's about the power. But his friends sure like the oil, and it sure does give him a lot of power to give his friends some more oil, or at least access to it, even though a lot of them don't seem to actually really want to go down there and get shot at to develop that oil. We shall see. This story shall continue. Thanks to everyone who called in. Apologies to those folks who I could not get to. We will try again soon. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, Petri Dish Doyen, as they call her, to our soundboard engineer, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, download them anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.